What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Sagar and Jetty is the co-host of Breaking Points with Crystal and Sagar. He is one of the leading voices when it comes to the intersection of politics and media. In this conversation, we talk about Bitcoin, media coverage of Bitcoin, the political arena, and also how the Bitcoin community can be thinking about legislation and politicians going into midterm elections. I really enjoyed this conversation with Sagar, and I hope that you enjoy it as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up is BlockFi. BlockFi provides financial products for crypto investors. Those products include a high-yield interest account, a U.S. dollar loan product against your crypto collateral, and a no-fee cryptocurrency trading product. BlockFi also just released a brand new Bitcoin Rewards credit card. It's a normal credit card that when you swipe it, you get Bitcoin back rather than cash back or airline miles. I'm an investor in the business and I'm a very happy user. The BlockFi Bitcoin Rewards credit card is absolutely amazing. To start earning today, go visit BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, BlockFi.com/pomp. I've got the credit card. I love it. I think you will too. BlockFi.com/pomp. Next up is Choice. It's time to stop paying capital gains taxes on your Bitcoin, and Choice is here to help. Choice is rebuilding the way Bitcoiners approach retirement by making it possible to invest in Bitcoin and 19 other digital assets inside your IRA. Right now, every time you make a trade, you have to pay capital gains taxes that can be as high as 37%. Choice enables you to trade real Bitcoin, other cryptos, and stocks without having to pay a dime in capital gains. The best part? They just released an iOS app, so you can open an account in less than 10 minutes and take control of your future from the palm of your hand. Join me and the 20,000 other Bitcoiners who have started their tax-efficient stack and open your Choice account today. Search Stack Sats in the App Store or visit choiceapp.io/pomp. Again, search Stack Sats in the App Store or visit choiceapp.io/pomp. And one more thing, if you want to hold your private keys, Choice lets you do that too. Start stacking tax-efficient Satoshis today and visit choiceapp.io/pomp. Last but not least are my friends over at Circle. If you manage corporate or institutional funds, you're probably looking for ways to access opportunities in crypto. You see the growth and momentum and you want exposure. But a lot of institutions don't know how or aren't comfortable with the risks of Bitcoin or DeFi. Now there's a new investment that's built specifically to help institutions get into digital assets. It's called Circle Yield. It's a blockchain-based investment built with USDC, the leading dollar digital currency. Circle Yield is over-collateralized and fully secured with Bitcoin collateral to protect your funds. This also makes it a great fit for crypto institutions who want to diversify their treasuries and reduce risks while staying all on-chain. You get your choice of terms from 1 to 12 months, and a fixed rate that's higher than what you'll get at a bank or in many fixed income markets. Visit circle.com/pomp to book a meeting with one of their experts. Again, circle.com/pomp and book a meeting with one of their experts. Big fan of Circle, and I think you will be as well. All right, let's get in this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this one.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Sagar, are you there?
I'm here.
Let's go.
Let's go, dude.
All right. First question. You guys have become what I would argue is the go-to source for people to find out about politics, news, breaking news, etc. People are done listening to CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. All these people are catering to the 60 and up crowd. What's the goal here? Like, what do you want Breaking Points to become? And how do you think about like the journey that you guys are on?
It's a great question, man. You know, to me,
well, all we do is great questions here, just to be clear. That's all we do is good questions. Well, all we do is great questions. So go ahead.
Right. That's always a tick, right? As an interviewer, I always notice that people always say that. So now I find myself in the same thing. But look, here's what it is that too many people have branded themselves outside of the mainstream. I don't think that that's the correct branding, or even the correct mission. The mission is to replace the mainstream. That's why I love what you guys do. That's why I ultimately love and I'll have a big the message of Bitcoin and a lot of the crypto community, which resonates with me the most, is not necessarily the antagonism, although I think antagonism is important. It's simply to replace the existing centers of power. I can see with my own eyes what's happening with CNN and the New York Times, MSNBC, all these BS streaming services that they're launching. I can't wait. I want them to fail. I want them to actually compete in the free market. This is what's happening right now, is that the internet freed all of us from the chains of a rigged system.
Facts.
And I want to explain this to people, which is that these cable places, they don't make any money from actually your eyeballs. They make money because Cox Communications and Comcast pays them to be a part of the cable bundle. Now, old people like live news. And look, I gotta say, like, it is valuable, right? Turn the TV on January 6th. Turn the TV on during these like BLM riots. Turn the TV on during 9/11. Live news is crazy. But the problem is, it's not actually valuable. What, 99.9% of the time? So they fill it with BS. And this has gone to the heads of a lot of the idiots here in Washington who think that people actually want to watch them. But it was rigged. It was a completely rigged game. And so now out here in the YouTube ecosystem, in the internet, where you actually have to compete for eyeballs and attention, nobody cares. Absolutely no one. And this is what the new mainstream is going to be for people our age, for people who are younger. I have a big Gen Z fan base as well. They don't care about CNN. Like, I am the news to those people. And I think that's the way it should be. I should have to compete, actually compete, for not only for your attention, but to try and inform you on a level playing field.
I think that you're hitting on a number of points here. First is they're all going to closed networks. You have to be on cable to watch them, right? If you don't watch it in the moment, then you're pretty much not going to see a majority of the content, all the issues that we know go on. And when you go to the open network, right, open networks win. People in Bitcoin understand open networks win over closed. And so same thing here in the media. Very interesting because you live in Washington, D.C. You're very plugged into what's going on there. How stupid are these people?
Dumb.
Yeah, like, and just so everyone understands, right? My brothers and I are very clear. Like, I'm an independent. I think that both sides are, you know, absolutely ridiculous at the extremes. I frankly think most people my age and younger are just getting to the point where they're just like, look, enough is enough. This is absurd. Like, there's real things at play here, and all of this kind of political divisiveness, etc., is really stupid. But like, you talk to a lot of these people on a daily basis. You don't need to give me names, but like, are they actually dumb, or are they like so smart that they know what they're doing and they're just kind of leading the American public into like the slaughterhouse?
So no, 99.5% are just complete and utter morons. And it's really important to understand the pipeline through which that these people succeed, which is that you are in the district, you're a lawyer. The way that you want, usually a lawyer or some like prominent businessman, then you court the party elites. All you have to do is win the primary. Okay, that's it. The most of these elections, something like 90 something percent, are not competitive. They're decided whether you have an R or a D next to your name. So the only thing that matters is the primary itself. So you have to cater to, let's say, 5 to 7% of the actual population of your district in order to represent the 99. It's actually not all that competitive, and it's mostly rigged by either the party elites or, you know, you can have a stupid contest in terms of appealing to those 5 to 7% and then basically winning once you get here. Once you get here, you have zero incentive to inform yourself about the broader world at all. All of these people either spend their time fundraising. They don't actually spend that time engaging with the news or the broader public. I mean, I frankly think the crypto community found this out the hard way during all of the regulation during the infrastructure bill is, and I'd been telling people, you know, Pomp, you and I met in Miami and I was telling you a little bit about this, which is, I was like, you got to be here. You got to shove it in their face and say, hey, we matter. We're real. This is where the future is, because they'll just wake up one day, decide that they need money for some BS part of their bill, and then they'll tax the shit out of you. And they'll do it, either they'll tax it or they'll regulate it in a way that they don't understand. They have no actual expertise. They don't actually seek knowledge on anything. Almost all of them are concerned with becoming famous or becoming and winning their primary. That's it.
Or becoming rich.
Curiosity is not rewarded in Washington. In fact, it's punished. It's dramatically punished, stepping outside of your box.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about this. All right, so talk to me about Breaking Points real quick before we get into kind of Bitcoin and some of the other stuff. How big is this thing? And like, talk, you know what, it's 7-8 months old now, and you guys are just taking the world by storm, literally going right at the throats of Fox, CNN, MSNBC, et cetera. I see you smirk, so I know you're like, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. How big is it? And like, how have you thought about the first 7 or 8 months?
Yeah, I was stunned by it. You know, I mean, look, I was scared. At the end of the day, like, I was worried about censorship. You guys have had to deal with this as well. But I was like, you know what? We put in 2 years, built the audience, built the Hill channel from 6K subs to 1.34 million on the day that we left. So look, 7 months in, we're at 700K subscribers on YouTube, but the daily numbers are well above an average CNN primetime broadcast, at least 1 million whenever it comes to the actual view or the, so whenever it comes to views and also within what really matters in news is something called the key demographic. So this is the BS part. Like all of these Fox, CNN, all that, they may say 3 million. It doesn't matter. The only thing that actually matters are the key demo, the 18 to 54 demographic. For even Tucker or Rachel Maddow, the highest paid people, the biggest news on broadcasting, they are 1/5 of what Breaking Points' actual key demo audience is. And that's not even including the millions of downloads a month that come on the podcast format from Spotify to iTunes. I mean, this is what you were saying. This is about the open ecosystem. You don't have to watch me live. You can watch it whenever you want at your convenience. I actually noticed in my podcast downloads, there are some people who wait until the weekend and then listen to all three of the episodes. Not the way I would consume news, but hey, whatever. You know, it's up to you. And I think that that's the important thing. So look, it's bigger than I ever imagined. Within 7 months, we basically blew out all of our 1 year goals within the first 2 weeks of launching and making sure that we were going to be sustainable. And it's only been up from there. So look, I mean, people showed up for us in a big way and made it even possible. And now I'm just, you know, now I've got ideas. I'm like, okay, now we've actually got the ability and the base to upgrade. So we upgraded our studio, 4K cameras. I was telling you this from what I understand, the engineers who helped build my studio told me that we have higher tech than CNN, MSNBC, and them. It's
how
a level playing field now.
It's pissed,
the internet.
How pissed is like Fox, CNN, and MSNBC? Do they even know this is happening? Or are they like reaching out to you kind of back channeling being like, hey, this isn't cool?
So it's really fast. You know, what's the thing? It's like first they ignore you, then they copy you. Then, you know, it's like then you beat something like that. At first, they just wanted to ignore us. They ignore for the first 2 years, not just Breaking Points, but whenever we were over at the Hill. But here's what started happening. And Crystal and I would notice that those people, their friends and family members who aren't into politics at all, would say something like, hey, do you know those guys, Crystal and so? And I would get texts and all those things and be like, oh, it seems like, you know, it seems like you're really working, that type of thing. Then what happened is now transitioned to anger and has been like a total blackout. But I'll be honest, like I welcome their hatred. And frankly, like I've even said this, the more you guys ruin the country, the better I do. Like I'm doing better because you guys are so terrible at your job. So we are in a mutual kind of antagonism phase where, you know, they try. It's all very inside baseball and it sounds super petty. But because I speak Washington, like I know what's going on, like they tried to leave us off of like the most influential people and media list, even though they put people on there who are like junior correspondents or whatever. It's like ABC News. They try and black you out of any of the recognitions and the societies and the accrediting situations. But look, I don't care. Numbers speak for themselves. At the end of the day, they know when they go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas and they talk to somebody who is not inside the beltway at all, they're going to be like, hey, I watch Breaking Points. That's how I get my news.
Dude, forget their societies. Let's create our own society. Who wants to hang out with those losers anyways? Yeah, exactly. That's my approach in life. All right, talk to us about another person who's done this really well, Joe Rogan. Why has Joe been so successful in building what now seems to be a dominant mainstream platform to help people learn and get the news out there?
So, you know, it's funny whenever people ask me about Rogan because it's actually not ideological at all. Joe just monetized and built an audience around several different facets of his personality. And not enough people actually think about it like this. the Joe Rogan experience. And I know this, I've been listening to Joe way before I ever got on the podcast. I was a fan when I was like 23 riding the Metro and I was broke as hell. Okay. So like I literally was in the actual demographic. Here's what Joe is. He is several different shows all in one. UFC, hunting, fitness, like alternative politics, now alternative science, bro science, and also wacky conversations that you have when you smoke too much weed, like comedy, obviously, being the core base of all of that. When you stack all of those together and you bundle it up into a single thing, you get the Joe Rogan experience. That's what I think that everybody misses whenever it comes to Joe, which is Joe. I mean, if you actually listen to the show, there's not a lot of politics on it. Yesterday, he had on an MMA fighter. The time before the day, the episode before that was a woman who was a lawyer and now does spearfishing for a living. And I found it pretty interesting, but it's a lifestyle culture show. And the reason why he can sneak in dissonant voices and dissonant news and get the information out there is because he has built up trust over a decade. And that's what these CNN people don't have. I mean, how many times have you and I and everybody watched them lie with our own eyes, and they never apologize? They never retract what they're saying. There's not even a mechanism to force it. I've seen Joe screw up pretty bad, and he does a video which he posts out on his Instagram. He's like, hey, everybody, I screwed up. I shouldn't have said this X, Y, and Z, or apologize for it on a show. And, you know, that's a lesson I've learned, too. I do a segment almost every 6 months called Everything I Got Wrong. And I go over, like, I'd be like, here's what I got wrong here. Here's what I got wrong here. I did a wrapper on the election where I was like, here are my worst predictions on what would happen in November of 2020. People really appreciate that. But these people, they're too arrogant to ever even assume that you would even notice that they got something wrong.
They've never been wrong. What are you talking about? Yeah, they've never been wrong. Exactly. All right. Talk to me. Last thing about Rogan is, was it Neil Young versus Joe Rogan? Absolutely hysterical that he basically gave him an ultimatum. They just like, get your old ass out of here. Nobody's listening to your music anyway. It's the number one podcast in the world. We ain't giving up him. What's your take on Joe Rogan versus Neil Young and Spotify's decision?
Yeah, I mean, look, props to Spotify, but dude, you know this. It shouldn't be up to Spotify. We got to build something so that with these lever points, what if it was Taylor Swift, man? Nobody can answer that question. What if it was, I don't know, like Wiz Khalifa or like Lil Nas X, you know, people who bring in real money to Spotify, then it could have been like a 50-50 decision. I don't think it should be up to anybody. This is why I'm a big supporter of the open system of the RSS feed. I always will be, because when you have single points of failure, it can be a problem. Props to Spotify for standing up. Obviously, Neil Young, like, sorry, boomers, you'll have to go elsewhere. You can put it in your CD player or whatever to listen to Neil Young. But I also want to point this out. There's something bigger going on here. Dude, Neil Young sold his catalog to a big hedge fund, which is owned by Blackstone. And Blackstone, you know, there's some shady stuff going on in terms of what they're invested in. And, you know, some people have sent me that they're even invested in some pharma tech. Now, look, I mean, I don't know if this has anything to do with it or not, but they spent $150 million. And when you have multi-billion dollar hedge funds, I know how dirty that these people play. I've seen it happen when it comes to mass censorship campaigns. These things are never organic, never. There's always something more going on here. I would not be surprised, given that Neil Young posted the letter and he deleted the letter. Was he even aware, like, what was happening? I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes.
Do you think that these large players, they fear now what we'll call the new mainstream more than they fear the old mainstream? Like, it feels like to some degree the hedge funds, all the insiders, they own CNN. They own Fox News. They own MSNBC. You, me, and a bunch of other people, ain't nobody telling me what to say. And if they came and told us about it, we'd literally make a video immediately, be like, listen to what they just called me and said they to do, right? And basically, they'd be like, all right, well, that backfired. Like, do they fear kind of this new wave of coverage, whether it's in the political arena, the business arena, just kind of more cultural things like Rogan? Is that kind of where we're at now?
That's where we're at right now. So like I said, first they would ignore me, but then all of a sudden I would do videos exposing hedge fund corruption and their head of PR would reach out, their, you know, heads. You know, I've told these stories publicly before, but I did an entire expose on TikTok and how they were hiring all of these lobbyists and throwing all this Chinese cash at people here in DC. And I exposed how the former head of cybersecurity under the Obama administration was now a TikTok lobbyist. It was all open public record. And they, I mean, they lost it, right? Like they called my bosses. They tried to say, this is when I used to be at the Hill. This is part of why I'm independent. They were like, you know, like he's threatening their lives, like exposing their identities. You know, I mean, I'm, call me, go ahead, try it. You know, I mean, their old tricks don't work anymore.
Yeah.
Like you said, I've said this before too. What was her name? She was the chairwoman of the financial services, Maxine Waters. Here's all I said. I said, Maxine Waters will be chairwoman of the Financial Service Committee till the day she dies. I said it because I was making a commentary about geriatrics in Congress and the seniority system. Okay. That's all I said. Her communications director called my bosses at the Hill after I said this and said that I was inciting violence against her. And they implied that, but if I didn't issue an apology, that they would not, you know, participate in some event that the Hill was doing. And, you know, I was like, hey, fuck you. Like, try it now, you know? And at the time I had to keep my, like my mouth shut, all that stuff. I dare you to try. I dare you to call me and tell me that. This is why they're terrified. All their old tricks. I'm just giving people a little peek behind the curtain. Jeffrey Epstein and ABC News, you know, the palace calls the head of Disney, all this stuff doesn't work here.
All of our power
comes from the audience.
I'm fearful that the more that we have to keep listening to their bullshit, the dumber we all get, right?
That's
like
true.
If you really think about it. All right, talk to me about Bitcoin. What I get the sense that on Breaking Points, like you want to keep talking about Bitcoin, kind of sliding it in there. Like, let's get like a Bitcoin segment. What are your real beliefs about Bitcoin? What is it? You're unshackled right now. You've got the floor. What do you think about Bitcoin?
Look, I'm pro Bitcoin. I'm absolutely pro Bitcoin. I'm a little bit more skeptical of some of the other stuff that's going on. And we could get into that if you want. But at the end of the day, I believe, and this pandemic really taught me and actually made me a lot more libertarian, which was we have to have an alternative ecosystem, monetarily, financially, societally, media, everything, in order to circumvent and go around the mainstream. All the channels and the only way that that exists, at least from what I can tell, is Bitcoin, the original and the decentralized currency, the hedge against the current global financial system. Because I just did a whole thing about Blackstone and the hedge funds. I can't be reliant ultimately on big tech and others in order to try and protect me. I'm grateful to them for not screwing with me yet, but that's not a viable system in the future. So look, it's simple. I met Balaji Srinivasan like 3 years ago. He was the first person who ever truly red-pilled me on what a crypto future could look like. And honestly, almost everything that he told me then, which I thought he was crazy, turned out to either be true or is happening like right now as we speak. In terms of, he was the first person who told me about, you know, people were going to, you know, geographically go around the United States, basically have regulatory arbitrage. I was like, I don't know, maybe. I mean, you're in Florida. You know what I mean? Like, look at Austin, how business is booming. San Francisco is basically dead. So I think that the core of the Bitcoin future is a hedge against the most powerful people in the country. And ultimately, to me, the pandemic taught me more than ever before that we have to have the ability to amass alternative wealth from the mainstream in order to use as leverage to protect our interests. And to me, Bitcoin remains the number one way in order to do that. I've been a hodler for like 3.5 years, something like that. I won't sell it. It's not about the price. To me, it's about the actual assurance for the future.
The part that's so crazy about it is like it's a hedge against the rich people, but then the rich people, of course, economic incentives take over. Like, oh, wait, people are going to make money? I used to always joke, like, there's no way Wall Street's going to sit by and let a bunch of strangers on the internet make more money than them, right? And so, like, these idiots are going to go, they're going to buy Bitcoin, which then pushes the price up, right? And it's like this whole positive feedback loop, which Satoshi ended up calling out very early on, saying, listen, there is this, like, positive feedback loop to an asset like this. So it's fascinating to watch. Joe, what questions you got first?
Cigar, thanks for coming on here and dropping bombs. I appreciate it. my question would just be about kind of what happens here with Fox, MSNBC, CNN, et cetera. What we've seen, in my opinion, right, is that cable is obviously declining. People are ditching their subscriptions every single year. Non-pay TV is increasing. Are they all just going to continue to try to transition to these streaming services like we're seeing them launch? And like, what happens there, in your opinion?
So I did a whole monologue on this. I predict a great war against your show, my show, and others. And here's the reason why. These streaming services that they're launching are terrible. The CNN one, I'm not joking here, is some of their exclusive content is Jake Tapper's book club, parenting advice with Anderson Cooper, and Fareed Zakaria's thoughts on geopolitics. And Eva Longoria, as well as Allison Roman's cooking show. Ain't nobody going to pay for that. And the moment that they realize that, and they know that they have poured $100 million down the drain, same thing over happening over at Peacock. Nobody's watching Mady Hassan's crappy show or Zerlina Max. I don't even know her name, honestly. I think her name is Zerlina Maxwell. Whatever. This is garbage. They're pouring millions of dollars into these terrible products because they don't actually know how to program for something that people want. But when they find that out, and you guys know this, what are they going to do? They're going to use the power that they still have in the mainstream to try to censor us. So this is going to happen 2 to 3 years from now. It's going to be one of the most brutal wars. This is also why I'm pro Bitcoin. We have to have the ability in order to make sure that we're competing on the level playing field. Right now, I'm sure you guys see this too. How does CNBC and all these places get all these views on YouTube? It's not real. It's like a fugazi. It's like a ghost view. It's something that gets pumped out into the ecosystem and given preferential treatment over our show, even though people don't necessarily want to watch it. It's going to be that times 1,000 whenever they actually have to compete with you and I. When these cable contracts dry up in a decade from now, it's going to be a bloody civil war.
You're obviously building a platform within YouTube, also within the RSS feed and all of the other stuff ancillary to it. But like, are you actively thinking about how to defend yourself against this?
So this is the thing. My revenue model, YouTube revenue is not something that I even think about. And here's why. Because mine is direct subscription based. And it's a SPY Supercast. I own the customer relationship, Stripe data, email. That's it. So my business doesn't matter. If we got pulled off of YouTube tomorrow, I could still pay my bills. I could still produce a very high quality new show and I could post it, you know, wherever I needed to, if necessary. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to come to that. And I'm not going to lie, like it'd still be a loss in terms of marketing and all that, but it's not existential. I built it from the ground way up with Crystal from day one with that in mind, which is we cannot be reliant on anyone and we cannot have single points of failure. I've seen this happen too many times. I've seen people program for a BS Facebook show, some BS show on Twitter or whatever. And I was like, you're out of your mind. They could change their algorithm like this and you're dead. And they are dead. I know people who lost their livelihoods as a result. So that was my plan. My plan was bet on the actual customer relationship between me and other people. And that was it. It's the purest form of support. It's the purest form of transaction. And ultimately, it makes you uncancelable because they're the only people who I am ultimately accountable to.
Love it.
John.
Cigar, has this shift happened from independent creators kind of taking over the legacy in the mainstream? Has it happened yet? And if not, like, when does it happen? How does it happen?
It's one of those things where nothing is happening until it is. I'm forgetting the exact Lenin quote where it's like decades happen in weeks and weeks sometimes feel like decades. It's something like that. But, you know, not to quote Lenin, but, you know, he was a smart guy sometimes. And what it came down to, which is that, look, it seems like it's immovable until it's not. And that's what's happening and where we are right now. The shift hasn't happened completely. Look, the legacy guys still control the big tech algorithms, or if they don't control it, they can, you know, put their foot on the scale or whatever. They can move things in the way that they are. But this is something that happens day after day. You have to grind. You have to get more eyeballs, more attention. And the longer that you do that, soon you're going to look at the numbers like Joe Rogan did, and you're going to realize, holy shit, I'm beating CNN. I'll never forget the day that I looked at my numbers on YouTube and I thought, this was like, you know, 2019. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, we just beat a CNN daily broadcast. I was like, this is crazy. Nobody realized it at the time. And then we would beat the Fox number. Then we would beat the MSNBC number. And then you're talking millions and millions. If you would look at the cumulative, you're like, oh my God, hundreds of millions of views, you know, X million, tens of millions of unique viewers. And you look at podcast analytics and it's hard to even fathom and comprehend how many people that is. I mean, I've been to rallies or to, you know, shows or whatever with 40,000 people. And that's like what, you know, 1/20th or whatever of somebody who will consume your content on a daily basis. Like when you start to think of the scale, you can begin to understand how quickly that this can happen. And once you reach a critical mass, you just go like this. It just goes vertical.
All right. Before we let you go, I want to play a little game. I'm basically just going to throw out names, topics, phrases, and you just tell me exactly what your unfiltered thoughts are. Ready?
Okay.
President Joe Biden.
Terrible.
Why?
Ultimately, Biden just does not know how to meet the moment. He is a bad president because he is too old, he's out of touch, and he's just too much of an institutionalist. Look, Joe Biden, I've got some great books behind me. Great presidents made you feel as if they cared about the issues that matter most to your life. Honestly, you don't even really have to do anything about it. FDR didn't solve the Great Depression ever in his entire term of presidency, but he won 3 separate presidential elections because people felt like their life was being ruined and at least the guy in power cared. Look, when you pursue Build Back Better and this voting rights, nobody cares. The price of gas is too expensive. My shit at the grocery store is too expensive. My kid has to wear a mask during school. I can go on. These are not even necessarily great. You know, I don't even have kids, but I'm verbalizing a problem that people have. The country is in chaos. People are miserable. The president is not even voicing a concern about that. And that's what makes him a bad leader.
Okay, next one. President Donald Trump.
Yeah, Trump, honestly, he had a lot of promise, but his problem at the end of the day was he just cared more about himself than he did about the country. I mean, I remember so many times in which Trump could have either tried to unite, tried to say something along the lines of better angels of our nature. But at the end of the day, he just cared about his own personal popularity and he cared more about, you know, his ego as opposed to the country. He had made a lot of big promises around bringing jobs back to America, about fixing trade with China. Almost none of that materialized. Most of it was just shit posting from behind the Oval Office. And so I would give him, not as bad of a grade as Biden, but really up there.
All right. Next one. Federal Reserve and monetary policy.
Oh, that's a good one. You know, it's fascinating. I'm sure that, I wish we could do this for like an hour because we could talk.
I'm going to bring you back like once a month. So don't worry.
Yeah, let's do this. No, because this is actually something which requires a lot of nuanced discussion. What I would say the biggest failure is around the fact that quantitative easing and all of this was pursued without any democratic input whatsoever. And that the effects of quantitative easing have actually caused and created a system in which people no longer feel any agency in order to have input, either both on their money, but also in how the broader economy runs. And so with the transfer of both wealth and power to just basically a very small group of people who are making all of the decisions which impact, 70-85% of the global assets, it makes it so that people feel completely disconnected from the broader global economy. So on that, I have to give them a failing grade. Just we will probably even disagree about like where, why, and all of that. But the key is this, which is that the actual legitimacy of Americans have faith in the legitimacy of their economy is near zero. And honestly, it should be. The shit is fake. And so when you realize that, it's a deeply powerful thing. And I blame the Fed for a lot of that.
Next one, politicians day trading stocks.
Oh, absolute ban. I'm very proud. Crystal and I were some of the first people to draw attention to this with Unusual Whales. Shout out to that guy. We've been doing this for over a year, reporting some of these trades. Absolute ban. I don't take their word for it. They want us to trust them. Do you trust Nancy Pelosi? Do you trust Dan Crenshaw? No. The answer to that is a flat no. My favorite was Crenshaw recently said that he needed to be able to trade to, quote, better himself. Listen, bro, if you want to better yourself, come out here, actually start your own business. You can come and add economic activity. You're in Congress. Your job is to better the lives of your constituents, of the American people. So screw you. That's really what I have to say to anybody who defends this stuff.
True or false, Breaking Points will buy CNN, MSNBC, or Fox News one day.
I would never buy those people. False. Fire all of them.
I knew it. All right. And then lastly is, when you think of Bitcoin, what are the things that jump to mind in terms of why it's important for the world?
I think I've laid it out. We have to have an alternative controlled by nobody, which gives us power. The future of not just America, but the future of humanity is the ability to pursue individual actualization through your own power. Yes, with some assistance, family, and all of that, but without reliance on broader central authority. The Bitcoin is the most vital and centerpiece of that entire mission. And so I would say, and the, you know, this is originally why we even started talking, I'm so sick of the media coverage on all of this. They'll go, Bitcoin crashed to half. Dude, I was shitposting moon memes at 15K. I literally remember that. I was like, going to the moon, 15K. I couldn't even imagine 35K. And they'll go, Bitcoin crash to 35. I'm like, bro, do you even know? I mean, I remember those roller coaster memes at like 8K, then we would go down to 6 and 9. Like, man, you know, the way they cover this stuff, they have no idea what some of us went through to even get here. So I'm in for the long haul, man.
I think that the dream of Bitcoin crashing to 35K in the future, like Bitcoin just crashed to $350,000. And we'll be like, yes.
We'll be like, yes, dude. Yeah, finally.
I completely agree.
All right, man, I got to jump off.
All right, really listen, where should we send people to find you on the internet? I just dropped the Breaking Points link in the chat. Everyone go subscribe. If you're not a subscriber, I'm not going to say you're a loser, but you should probably go subscribe. Where can we send them,
brother,
on the internet?
BreakingPoints.com, Breaking Points on YouTube, Breaking Points podcast, Esauger on Twitter, all of that.
Yeah, he has no hot takes, zero hot takes on the internet. You should definitely not show your mom his Twitter account. Awesome,
thank you,
man.
Brother.
Thank you so much for coming on. We'll do it again soon.
I would love to.
All right, later. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to try to transition to get a new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to pompscryptocourse.com. We've developed a curriculum with the top teams across the industry. It's a 3-week intensive training program with over 50 events packed into that 3-week time period. Go to pompscryptocourse.com to learn more, and I'll meet you guys for the next episode.